Hello, welcome to Bagel Tech Mac, the weekend Mac show from the Bagel Tech Network. We discuss all things Apple, iPod, iPad, anything iDevice, and anything that takes our fancy from Apple. So, straight away, straight in with the usual crew, plus a new addition. We've got Mr. Don McAllister, top left. Hello, mate.
Hello, Ewan. How are you this week?
I'm all right, thanks for asking. I've had a decent week. I've had a nice day away with the family doing Chessington World of Adventure-y thing, which was very nice. And I had me face painted like Spider-Man, so a bit of juvenile behaviour never goes amiss.
Where are the pictures? If there's no pictures,
I tweeted it out, actually.
Did you?
Yeah, I did tweet it out. I'll dig one out for you, mate, if you're that bothered.
Oh, no, you're all right. I'll search, honestly, later on.
good week for you?
Yeah, busy. It's Good Friday here in the UK, as you well know. Here we are, still all chained to our desks. But no, busy week. I managed to get ahead of myself for the first time. So I've actually got this week's show in the can and next week's show. Good. I'm just waiting to publish this week's show, though, because it's a sponsored one. And I'm just out of courtesy, let the sponsor have a look at it first. I'm just waiting for him to come back and say, smashing.
Good.
And then I'll press the button.
No, I'm surprised, actually, because today we thought it was going to be a bit quiet, and I didn't think we'd be doing any shows at all. And everyone for every show has said, yeah, I'm up for it. Quite surprised.
Well, I think on the internet, sort of these days sort of merge into one another anyway, don't they? So you never know if it's a Friday, a Saturday, or whatever. So we're here anyway, that's the main thing.
Bank holidays are a pain in the arse.
Oh, yeah, you don't want to go anywhere.
You can't shop, nothing. Mm-hmm. Next to him, Andrew Stevens, Dr. Happy Mac. Hello, mate. How was Glasgow?
Oh, lovely. What a lovely city. I was so surprised that I'm half my family's from there. I haven't been really to Glasgow since I was a kid. So we wandered around the place. I'm really impressed with the vibe of the place. Fantastic. Lovely architecture, brilliant shopping, really compact city. Loved it. It was really good.
It is a lovely town.
Mm, and I have officially drunk more wine in the last 3 days than I've drunk in the rest of my life combined.
Really? I mean, yeah, it's not known for its wine out there, is it?
My cousins are. It's just like, on the way home, stop at Lidl, 6 bottles of wine in for the evening. There's only 4 of us drinking.
Good God, that's a good ratio. Never mind.
Yeah, it's not bad, is it? And then he's got like cupboards full of the stuff on emergency supply. So yeah, we were glued to the pillow for a few mornings there. It was a bit of a.
Glued to the pillow, that's...
Oh, yes.
Maybe that's the show title after all. Next, below him, we've got Mike Hurley from The Bro Show. Hello, mate.
Hello, thank you for having me.
No, good to have you on, mate. We always like fresh blood, mate. As things been where you... Whereabouts are you in the world?
In Dagenham in Essex.
Dagenham. What a fabulous place.
Could say that.
Make films about you.
They do.
So, The Bro Show. Tell us about The Bro Show.
The Bro Show is a podcast that I do with my good friend Terry Lucy. And we've had Don as a guest a couple of times as well. It's effectively like a... part interview show and part mainly Apple news and tech and stuff like that.
Ah, jolly good. He's just down the road from Sarah, so you got a cup of tea off her there at some point. She's in Essex as well. Week's been good?
Yeah. Yeah, it's nice to have a bank holiday, long bank holiday weekend, one of two.
Yeah, it is always good, definitely. Although it is a pain. And last but by no means least, with videoless still, Will Green.
Hello.
British Mac Man. How's things this week?
I've had a really good week, actually.
Oh, you have?
I have.
What's gone right for a change?
I've got quite a lot of training coming up, which is nice. And a few interesting things. I will be touring the UK and Northern Ireland as well through May.
You're going on tour?
Huh?
Are you going on tour?
Yeah.
So is this going to be like the Radio 1 Roadshow in the summer?
I can't say who I'm touring with.
And now, live.
That'd be nice, wouldn't it?
Dude, can I do the voiceover for that? If you do, can I do the voiceover for that, please?
No problems.
That would be so cool. We've got a question from the chat room already, Don. Any updates from Don on today's SEO tutorial?
Yeah, it will be with you shortly. It'll be with you shortly, hopefully.
Patience, dear boy. Patience.
I know, patience. It'll be worth waiting for, though. It's a free one this week as well, so everyone can download it. But probably a couple of hours after this show's finished, I'll be able to get it published. I'm just waiting on the green light from my sponsor for this week, but not anticipating any particular problems.
Must be nice to be in demand, mate.
It is. It's good. Well, I don't like to let people down. You know, I like to be there regularly. Normally, I publish on a Friday morning, so it is a bit later than usual.
Talking of being in demand then, Apple have had a very good financial quarter. There was a suggestion earlier on that Mac sales were up 47% in March, which I guess probably is a chaotic, excuse me, for a lull in February before the new ones came out. But overall, they're pretty much, they're up 11% or something like that, but not an awful lot. They shipped 18.7 million iPhones in 2011 so far, and they've done iPod sales are down 17%, so that'd be interesting to try and figure that one out. Also, we've got the iHub came out on Monday, and it was canned yesterday. That didn't last very long, but it looked great, a little 2.0 hub with an Apple on the front. And there's a ton of stuff on that website that's Apple ripoff. And apparently there was a number one version of that that Apple never got to because no one published it on Engadget. And the minute it's gone up on Engadget, it's been pulled down. iPad outnumbers Linux for web surfing. And of course, they're in trouble at the moment because of some tracking thing going on with the iPhone itself. Now then, where shall we start? Shall we do the tracking thing and get that out of the way?
If you must.
Apple is tracking your movements using your iPhone and storing it in a file that then is downloading that to the your basic computer. Now, it's fairly secure, they reckon, when it's on your iPhone, but when the file gets downloaded to your computer, that's when it becomes a little bit more vulnerable. And it tracks everywhere that you go and everything that you do, and it probably knows what colour underpants you're wearing as well as. Is this a storm in a teacup, or...?
Yeah, I don't think it's... You said... Beginning there, you said Apple are tracking, but there's no evidence that the file ever gets back to Apple.
Hmm.
I mean, the phone is definitely tracking, but it's got GPS location services on it, so it's got to track you.
Well, I was thinking about the you know, Find My iPhone thing. How the hell does that work if it doesn't know where it is and it doesn't track where it is?
Yeah, I mean, but if you notice when you use Find My iPhone, you switch it on, it doesn't know where your phone is. There's a delay whilst it goes, hang on, I'm trying to track you down, running the GPS locators, having a look, trying to narrow you down. So when you turn, you know, even Apple's own built-in piece of kit, Find My iPhone, it doesn't know where you are until the GPS locators have kicked in. So, yeah, I mean, when I first read the headline, it was like, obviously the internet goes mad and it's like, Apple are coming through your door.
Well, they know where I live anyway because the bloody contractor signed for my phone.
Yes. But I mean, if you buy a phone which is chock full of GPS locators and every other app's going and saying this app wants to know where you are, it's going to know where you are.
So it's a storm in a teacup. There's no credence to this whatsoever.
Well, people get worried about these things, don't they? Whereas, you know, I think they do worry unnecessarily, but I just hate the way it gets all blown out of proportion. I mean, this particular file, it's nothing new as well. There was a post yesterday from someone who had actually discovered this over a year or so ago, and it was well publicised. They actually even wrote a book about it and sort of explained, you know, where the file... I'm not sure if it actually mentioned the specific file, but it certainly mentioned the fact that you could actually get access to this data and the data was on the phone. And I think even Apple have responded to, again, you know, more than a year or so ago, they responded to a question about what they do with GPS location data or location aware data that there is on the phone. They published like a 17-page PDF which explained exactly what they do and why they need it and stuff like that. So, you know, suddenly a blog gets hold of a piece of information and goes, oh, Apple is tracking your every move, and, you know, everything explodes. And I just find it all a bit, you know, I mean, for goodness sake, people are giving their location away to Gowalla and you know, Foursquare every 5 minutes these days.
Exactly. But, you know, I'm the mayor of.
Just annoys me.
I mean,
originally, prior to iOS 4, the file was hidden. And since iOS 4, the file is now visible when you look into the file system of the phone. And then suddenly, you know, people have gone, oh, there's this file that was never there. And it was always there, but previously it was an invisible file.
Right, okay. I mean, the thing is as well that these two guys apparently are talking at some security conference and Wear conference, so it's timed perfectly for them for their little keynote. And also the senator that's jumped on the bandwagon and wants Steve Jobs to personally respond to him over the issue never does any harm, of course, with a bit of publicity, especially if we've got any kind of election due in the next couple of years. So it doesn't lose in the telling, this one, does it? Everyone's not bothered?
I mean, I took a look at it myself, and it is interesting. It kind of shows where you've been, and we were looking at it before we recorded the bro show this week, and Terry was pointing out all the motorways that I'd driven down, which was quite peculiar. But once you actually zoom in, it's, you know, it's clear that it's not taking accurate data because all of the dots are in a little grid. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's, yes, it's taking the information, but what anyone could actually do with it, I'm not personally very bothered by it at all, really.
Yeah. Any word from you, Will, or are you kind of laissez-faire? Have you even heard about this?
How dare you, sir?
Sorry, did I wake you up, mate? You just have no comment, I take it.
So what? So tell me again.
Snooker
what are
in the background.
Say again, Will. Go on.
Tell me again. What they're doing?
Oh God! Wait, I love you so much.
Who's Apple?
Who's Apple? Yeah.
Go on, then. Tell me what they're doing. Really?
There's a file that tracks where you go on your phone, and it downloads the file back to your computer when you sync. And it contains location data from the GPS system.
Right.
So it says where you've been and that's it. And people are worried because the file's suddenly shown up that Apple know where you are and what you're doing and that they're being Big Brotherish.
I don't imagine they care much, do they?
Do Apple really care where I am? No, that's a good point.
You know, they've got a bigger fish to fry than find out, you know, where we've been.
Well, it would be a useful file for the future, would it not? Because we've always been going on about location-based advertising and the fact that no matter where you are, then your phone can then send you advertising, you know, Joe's Cafe around the corner or something is waiting for your order. So, you know, there's that element to it, but that's just, that's available already, isn't it?
Nah, so this is a non-story, isn't it?
Absolutely. There we go. We'll move on then, shall we? iPad sales are down. So who's got the beer being delivered in the background?
Oh, that's me. Yes, I had a choice of whether I did the podcast from home or the office, and I chose the wrong place, I'm afraid.
You have. You're a noisy git. Stop it, Stevens. Right, so iPod sales down 17%. Any ideas as to why? Because that seems quite strange. Is the iPod dying?
Mature technology.
It's just too old.
Well, everything has a lifespan, I guess, doesn't it? It's like, you know, you can't be top of the world, Mar, for ever. I think it was, you know, I don't know. Are they down?
They're down. 17% down last quarter.
Yeah. I mean, everyone, apart from the fact that you get to a point where everyone in the world's got one and they open a cupboard in their house and 10 old iPods fall out, you know, there's a point where you can't really sell anyone any new iPods.
That would mean that we sold 60 billion iPods, which I think probably isn't the case.
Well, yes,
is this just the phone? Because the phone now is becoming so synonymous with applications and with usage, and it's taking over the iPod functionality as well. If there is an iPod being sold, it's the touch over everything else. And the nano market certainly is hit hard because of the camera going missing and that kind of stuff. So
I think I saw a stat somewhere that I think it's 50% of iPod sales are actually iPod Touch.
Yeah.
So, but definitely the phone's making a huge impact on the iPod sales, because I mean, myself, you know, I use my phone as my iPod now, and it's you know, I'd never really consider buying another one. I don't really need another one because the phone's with me all the time. Unless you're going to the gym or something, when you don't want to carry your phone around with you, you might get a Nano or something. But you know, the phone certainly does it for me.
The point being as well, I think that if the storage level that was available to you in your iPhone was to be increased, say up to 64 gig or something like that, I mean, would that put a nail in the coffin of the iPod, even the touch potentially at that point?
I don't know. I think there's still people who want to take their whole music collection with them, and some of the people have got, you know, ginormous music collections. They still prefer the old iPod classic when you've got the, you know, the standard hard drive in that you can put in, you know, many, many more gigabytes of data than you can with a solid state device. But there probably will come a time when, you know, they do add in additional memory, so that doesn't become such an issue. I mean, I've never really had a problem with my iPod filling up. I mean, I've got a 32 gig iPhone, and you know, more than happy with that. My library is bigger than that, but I just use smart playlists and, you know, various playlists to just bring across the music that I want, and that's fine. And of course, there's other things like Spotify now, which will run on the iPhone as well. So, you know, if there's stuff I haven't got on my iPhone, I can actually normally get it through Spotify as well.
Anyone else?
I don't think it's weird, but saying it for an Apple product, but you know, the iPod Shuffle and the iPod Nano, you see them on the shelves, and you see what I don't think they're cool. I think that Apple have got a load of iPod products that are just not cool anymore. The only cool product they've got is the Touch. And that's what all the kids want. They love the apps more than they love the iPod almost. I just don't think that the ones that people are, you know, that would make up the bulk of the purchase at £129 and 30. I just don't think they're not cool products.
See, I bought the shuffle for the wife at Christmas because she likes to walk Ellis down to school and walk back from there. So she wants some music playing. And rather than carry her iPhone, she wants the shuffle. And I bought her the little watch band and everything. The watch band's really, really cool. But there's really simple stuff that seems to be missing. There's no Bluetooth ability in the shuffle. So you can't use a Bluetooth headset. Instead, you've got to have a cable connected to your cool wrist strap that you've got on. And it was just like the Nano has completely lost it because it's got rid of the camera. The video everywhere, putting it up onto YouTube's all disappeared. So no one wants the shuffle anymore. No one wants the Nano, rather. The shuffle just isn't good enough. It doesn't do enough to make it a valuable product. The first product that you get to is the shuffle. So I agree with Andy there. I think there's not a lot in the lower end of the cool line of the iPod market anymore.
As a slight tangent, did you see that Cisco has killed off the Flick thing?
Flip Video, yeah.
Yeah, Flip. That's not Flick. Yeah, Flip.
Flip Video.
Flick
went
could
last
have been
week.
A better name, I think.
Flick.
Oh, the Flick.
The Flick.
The Flick. Air
Flick.
The Flick R.
Yeah, which has surprised me because I thought that was doing quite well. I mean, it's it was one of the first, wasn't it?
Well, the other thing was that Cisco bought it. They spent $500 million buying the $500 million. Yeah, $500 million buying the thing in the first place, and then they've killed it off within 2 years. So there's no way they've made their money back on the purchase of that. I can't believe for one second.
Didn't they say that they wanted to buy it so they could just try and understand the consumer space a bit? Which seems a bit of a weird reason to buy a company anyway.
Yeah, you can buy companies to make money, surely. There wasn't an awful lot of money made in it, for sure. The process was apparently, as well, it was killed off last Thursday, and on Friday they were due to launch a new product, which was a Wi-Fi streaming camera. They got it all set to go, and it was going to be launched on the Friday, and they killed it on Thursday afternoon.
That's give it amazing. A couple more weeks, maybe?
Yeah, just sell a few.
Just sell one, and then better than selling none.
Yeah, there's a zero line on that one. And the interesting thing as well is Toshiba have today brought out a brand new camera that shoots 1080p with a plug-in SD card. It's completely waterproof down to about 10 feet, and it shoots 5-megapixel stills as well as, and it's $150. So if they knew that was coming, maybe, and it's heavily rubberized as well, so it's something you can throw at the kids quite happily, and the kids can throw around. So maybe they thought the market was going down, and they never went to 1080p video, did they? Always stuck at 720 for the HD.
One thing I'd like to say about the video cameras, and also DSLRs and fa-la-la-la, is I wish they'd have line-ins. None of them seem. There's only one I know of that has a decent line-in. Everything doesn't have line-ins, and you think, well, you're making the little, you know, wizardry that goes inside the camera. Or the iPhone or anything else, or the iPad. It can't be that difficult to put a line in, can it? I don't know why they don't do it.
Well, if you talk to a lot of videographers, we've got Chris Dick, who's on the photo show, and Chris always says the one thing he misses the most is not the line in, it's the monitoring line out. There's no earphone socket that allows you to hear what audio is going into it, and that bothers him a great deal as a videographer.
Hmm.
So there was no audio in or out on the thing. So again, it's space, I suppose, and functionality and that kind of thing.
But it adds a huge amount. I mean, if you look at the new Canon 600D and 550D, one of its big selling points, the reason it's apparently so successful, is because it's got a line in for microphone.
Well, all of those ranges have got external mics that hot shoe onto the top of the DSLR. So they need some sort of interface to get the audio in. But again, most videographers, the serious videographers, don't want that. They want the video out from it. They want the audio out, sorry. They want to monitor the audio that they're capturing from it. Which is, I'm not sure what this has got to do with Apple, but if we're talking about the iPhone, I suppose, it comes into it. But and there's a whole load of stuff for the iPhone been brought out this week for photography. Mm.
Well, that's what I was talking about, really. I mean, I agree with both points, in and out. Why not do it? It can't be that difficult, can it?
It's just
I suppose
a joke.
They've got their market, I don't want to say share, but focus. The focus groups are probably assess their market, and probably those two things are would push the price up $10 or something, and maybe the majority of people wouldn't want either of those.
Is it the point
I got this week one of those iRig microphones?
All right.
Which is a handheld microphone that, to be honest, I've got it. I've not had a chance to try it yet, but it's a handheld microphone that has an adapter on the end that you plug into your iPad or your iPhone. And it's like a double adapter, so there's also a headphone socket coming off, so you can actually listen to the microphone at the same time. There's some software that you get with it, but it looks okay. I did see a review on the typical, Tua, which, and they did put some sound samples up, which I wasn't too impressed with, to be honest, but that was sort of after I'd already pre-ordered it. So it's arrived now, so I'll give it a test myself and see what it's like.
I mean, the iPhone microphone is actually very good anyway.
It is very good, actually, yeah, because they did some samples of the standard mic and this iRig mic, and I thought the iPhone mic itself sounded better, to be honest.
having just spent $24.95. Sorry, Will, go ahead.
I was going to say, I had a mate who's a pro musician came around the other day, and the big thing he whinges about the iPhone is stereo microphone. Was it stereo speakers? I can't remember now. which one was he moaning about? has he got stereo speakers? Well,
I don't think so, does he? No, it's a single speaker on the iPhone.
Yeah, single speaker.
It's microphone, that's right, because we were talking about that Zoom thing, you know, that...
Oh, portable. Yeah.
Yeah, and he's got one of those, and he was saying if they just added stereo microphone to the iPhone, it would be... It'd be useful for him, but I mean, would it be useful for anybody else? Maybe with the video now, because going back, the full circle, we're really focusing on the video thing about this, aren't we? And it really would add to the quality of the video you're shooting.
Is this partly as well, though, just the fact that we're going back to the old Steve Jobs ethic of the fact that consumers don't know what they want until I tell them what they want? You know, they're not going to do anything unless Steve says that that's what we want. They won't do anything at all. It's not coming. It won't happen. It's not ours.
He's very dictatorial, isn't he, old Stevie?
Yeah, I mean, that's his line. You know, consumers don't know what they want.
Well, I do. I want a line in on my iPhone.
A line in?
Yeah.
I've got corrected in the chat room, apparently, about it being Toshaba, but I don't know if that's a joke or not, but I've just gone and checked, because I'm not unknown to make the odd mistake.
No, it was the way that you pronounced it. It sounded like you said Toshaba.
Oh, right, okay, sorry, do apologise. That's me, dyslexia. I've got a dyslexia.
I used to have dyslexia.
You did, but you cured.
No, I had some nasty spells, though.
Gosh, moving on. Will, now, you haven't bought anything yet to replace your studio equipment, have you? A, for security reasons.
Oh.
But B, I mean, there's an awful lot of stuff potentially on the horizon. Now, they're talking next month about IMAX coming out, and they'll come out with Thunderbolt more than likely. And they're also talking this morning now about a Mac Pro coming out, 5 inches thinner than the current model and only at 19 inches, so it can be rack mountable. Anyone got any thoughts about that for Will before he rushes out and buys some IMAX? Because you need to read the news when you're buying Macs, mate, trust me.
Well, the Mac Pro must be due for a refresh because, I mean, the actual, you know, the enclosure we've had for goodness knows how long. I think it's 6 or 7 years now, or even longer.
2003.
Wow. So that's a long time, isn't it, in the computer space?
8 years.
Sort of each time they brought out a Mac Pro, I've sort of half expected to see a new enclosure. But the thing is, the reason I think they've kept it, well, it's perfectly functional, and it looks fantastic, but you needed the expansion slots. You know, lots of Mac Pros are used in a pro environment where you need some additional expansion slots for specialist equipment or for even just to connect some eSATA drives to it, even though they're eSATA ports on the motherboard itself. You know, you've got to put in a slot in the back to actually get access to them. So, but with Thunderbolt, that sort of will disappear. The need for expansion slots will just disappear, so they can actually scale down and not worry about leaving provision for expansion slots. So they can do what they want with the form factor and, you know, a nice slim, either floor-standing or rack-mountable Mac Pro with a Thunderbolt port in sounds pretty sweet.
I mean, is this really a flyer, though, going to a kind of rack mount? Because X-Serve's disappeared, so they haven't got that end of the market covered anymore. And I guess the professional market, which is where you're really looking to sell the Mac Pros, hence the title, I suppose, does what it says on the tin, are looking for something that's more like that. But the first thing I thought when I saw about going out to the rack was the heat. I mean, are you really going to dispel the heat well enough with that to really rack mount it?
Well, the other day I was off on site doing X-Serve stuff for a client, and we were talking about, you know, what are they going to do they bought their X server a while ago. What can they replace it with? They really weren't thinking that the Mac Mini was a viable alternative because of all the things it doesn't do. You know, it doesn't have expansion capabilities. It doesn't have hot swappable power supplies. It doesn't have hot swappable drives, all of which can go into the Mac Pro if they wanted it to. But they were looking at them. I mean, the Mac Pro is a 6U enclosure, which means that if you want to mount, they were in a serviced offices, if they want to mount their Mac Pro as a and run it as a server, then they've got to buy 6U's of rack space, which is six times what the X server would have cost them. So they were getting pretty peeved off that, you know, Apple were offering them absolutely no way or nothing. You know, there was nothing they could do with this thing except solder on with the X server. And I think with server being built into Line when it pops out later this year, it's going to be a real conundrum for Apple. They've got to make the Mac Pro thinner because nobody's going to rack mount the damn thing as it is at the moment. And they've got to make the power supply hot swappable. They've got to make the drives easily reachable whilst it's rack mountable. I just don't think you can't do that in a form factor that's going to work under the desk of a musician or a video professional.
Don, two interesting two points particularly here, Don. Yours is the user of a Mac Pro, which is currently churning away, running out video, and what that's going to do for you, whether you'd be tempted to go up. And then also from Will's viewpoint, because Will, you were talking about when you got your iMacs, you wished you'd bought Mac Pros instead, and whether it would then make you hop across and change differently.
Yeah, I've been really sort of following the iMac thing and held off buying iMacs purely because of these rumors that are circulating. There's a site, I can't remember what it's called now, it's something like MacRumors/, you know, when to buy your computer or something like that. And it traces the last refresh date and the average amount of days between refreshes. And at the moment, the iMac is something like 60 days, or is it 30 days? Something. Anyway, so it's a considerable amount of time after the average refresh. So we are so prone to, and I originally heard it was going to be March, and then, you know, it keeps stepping forward. But I think any day now, if you're looking to buy an iMac, I'd probably hang fire a little bit. So for delegates, I'm going to stick with iMacs, but for the sort of the beast that sort of runs the server and everything else, I think I'm going to go for a Mac Pro. But then again, I'm going to hang on for the Mac Pro, because as Don says, it's been a long time since we've had a refresh of the case design. But then again, I mean, the case is okay, isn't it? I mean, it's a great case, and they gave it a major, but a substantial internal redesign. Probably, what was it, 2 years ago?
It was when the iCore two duos came out. What's the one? The one with the X in it? Bugger. I can't remember. It's the one I had.
But
2007.
But, you know, as Andrew says, you've got to. So, Xeon, like a Mac Pro is not going to be. It's a workstation rather than a server, isn't it? And workstations typically need to be quiet because of the places they're put in.
Yeah, I mean, what I think they'll do is I don't think they'll redesign the Mac Pro to be a direct replacement for the XServe, because the XServe was a dedicated server machine meant for data centers. It was meant to be, you know, as Andrew said, it had a hot swappable power supply, you know, had easy access. It was meant to be fitted in multiple units in a rack and sit in a data center. What I think they're going to do, or what I would assume they'll do with the Mac Pro, is they'll just, rather than convert it into an X server replacement, they will just make it rack mountable, so that, you know, if people do want to have three or four Mac Pros in a server closet somewhere, they can do. But I don't think they'll design it to be a, you know, an industrial strength server component. I think they'll just make it, you know, lots of people who have pro setups have a little server cabinet with effects, you know, effects units in. And, you know, if they were to make a nice Mac Pro that would actually slot in there as well, and they could get it out of the way and put it in a soundproof enclosure if they needed to, stuff like that, that would be great. So I don't think they'll be engineering it to completely replace the XServe, but, you know, in a pro or semi-pro environment where, or even in an enterprise environment where you do have a need for a small number of servers, you know, they would probably be able to rack them up and manage them easily, but not really for sort of heavy duty, you know, multi-hundred data centers and stuff like that. Mm. But of course, the timing as well. I mean, you've got Final Cut Pro coming out in June, You've got WWDC in June as well. So they're two things which are really, you know, aimed at pro and development environments. It would be an ideal time to bring out the new Mac Pro, because although we're not getting the iPhone, I think that's pretty much a given now in WWDC. If they were to announce a new Mac Pro at WWDC, you know, that's some hardware that we can drool over, and the timing is just right, you know, for the Final Cut Pro launch as well.
They could put some lights on the front, couldn't they, like they did with the this isn't a joke, like, you know, with the X-Serve there. So if it was going to go headless, the lights on the front indicate the status and that sort of stuff. That would be a welcome addition to the Mac Pro, wouldn't it?
Okay. Mike, if you're waiting for someone to ask you if you want to speak, you're never going to get asked to. Just jump in.
I'm not a Mac Pro user. I never have been. But I would find it a bit peculiar for Apple to remove the X-Serve and then want to replace it with a Mac Pro. But also, we're definitely going to see a refresh of all Mac hardware probably over the next 6 to maybe 8 months because of Thunderbolt.
Yeah.
Mm. I mean, if you go to, I think what you're talking about, Will, is buyersguide.macrumors.com. Thanks to Max Heston, Mark Dalton in the chat room posted that one.
Did you get the headless thing, though? That wasn't a joke.
No, it's okay. I just...
it was like, okay, yeah, whatever.
When in doubt, put lights on the front.
Whatever you got to say, I'll move on.
No, I got a comment. iPod Classic, it's cautioning, don't buy, updates soon. I kind of questioned that one. I don't think they're going to update the iPod Classic. iPod Touch, only if you need to. They're showing the old iPod Shuffle as well on the front of there and saying, don't buy it, update soon as well as. And they're saying iMac don't buy and Mac Pro don't. I mean, most of this stuff is don't buy, including the white MacBook.
iMac, Mac Pro, all the desktop stuff. But as Mike says, you know, it's ripe for a refresh. It's gotta now, especially be. With the Thunderbolt. That's going to be the driver for the next sort of tranche of updates that they're going to do.
Definitely. So Will's definitely going to go for an iMac for the delegates and then Mac Pro for the rest of the stuff.
Yeah, I'm going to get the iMacs as soon as they're released and the Mac Pro as soon as that's refreshed. I think that's the thing. But the old argument is, you know, you've got to commit at some point, and normally I would have committed now, but it's just too close, isn't it?
Yeah, the thing is, though, Will, what about the, you know, if they're going to refresh the Mac Mini? Because that in itself is a great little box, you know, it's quite a fast little box. Mm. And the only thing it's limited for pro use is the expansion. You know, you can't install cards in it or anything. But if they had a Thunderbolt Mac Mini in perhaps, you know, a slightly bigger case, or, you know, with a quad-core Mac Mini with a Thunderbolt, I mean, that's, I would think for a lot of people that would actually suffice rather than a Mac Pro.
Does anyone know what it is with the Mac Mini? Several people, my clients, might have bought them, and it comes with 2 gigs of RAM, which is shocking. Mm. So, I mean, 4 gigs of RAM works really well on everything else, iMacs.
But 8's not expensive. I think £200
fly
like
along,
8 in it.
MacBook Pros, 4 gigs of RAM, that's good. 4 gigs of RAM in the Mini, it's still a dog. What? 8 gigs of RAM in the Mini, bang. Whoa, welcome to a new computer.
Yeah.
Does anyone know why, particularly... I mean, I know it's still only a Core 2 Duo processor, but for some reason, 4 gigs of RAM just not enough for the Mac Mini.
Well, Mac Mini still have integrated graphics?
Yeah, it does. It's only got 256 as well. That's one of the key problems with it. I mean, I've been messing around with Boinks and Wirecast. Wirecast I love because it runs at 30 frames per second with a 256 graphics card in there with 8 gig of RAM running. 8 gig of RAM only cost me £200 when I bought the unit, though, to get it up to that spec. So, and it was very easily changed by yourself. You just unscrew the bottom and pop it in, as you did before. I think the Mac Mini, though, be careful, because it's one of those machines that isn't something and isn't something else either. In that as an entry level machine, it's too far overpriced. So, at £300 to £400, I'd buy a Mac Mini for my son's bedroom for him to have internet access. But at £700, I'm not going to.
Don't forget that we're talking about the existing Mac Mini. I'm talking about a new, really designed, relaunched Mac Mini. So that might be different.
But that's the point, is in the form factor that you've got, are you ever going to get enough hardware in there and performance and heatsink for it to ever function at a higher end? That was my next question. You know, it's okay if you talk about it being the drug test, you know, the entry-level Mac, the first Mac that you ever get. But if you want it to do more, it's lacking in form factor, it's lacking in hardware and functionality just to physically get it in and then lose the heat from that. You're never going to get a 1 gig graphics card in there, surely.
If you stripped out the screen and the battery from a MacBook, how much are you left with? And couldn't that fit inside a Mac Mini enclosure?
But you've got a larger form factor to lose the heat, though, surely.
Very true.
That's my point. I mean, at the moment, this thing generates a little bit of heat, but it's not too bad. And it deals with, and Wirecast, it deals with 30 frames a second HD video, which is fantastic. With 8 gig, you know, running it and only 256 of graphics, if you want to boost this thing up to be more, it's the TARDIS, effectively, then, at that point.
Yeah. Now, the only point I'm making, though, is that the Mac Pro, the current Mac Pro, the only reason it's in such a big enclosure, historically, because it used the old, you know, processors, which did generate a lot of heat, and there's some serious fans in there. But also, they needed the space for expansion cards. Well, once you put Thunderbolts into the equation, they can sort of lose all the restrictions of the enclosure, obviously, other than heat, etc. But, you know, they could cram quite easily, you know, dual core or two dual core processors in there, and not necessarily exactly the same size case. It might be slightly taller, it might be slightly bigger, but, you know, that small cube type enclosure, I'm sure that they've got some plans around that.
I think you're inventing this, Don, in your brain.
Yeah, of course.
It's changed everything. It's going to be a different shape. It's going to be packed with processors. Go on, Don. Where do you know all this?
they're not constrained. Thunderbolt takes away a lot of the constraints of what they've had to put up with the Mac Pro, purely because of the, you know, the lack of expansion or the need to for it to be expandable. And once you've got Thunderbolt, of course, we still need all the Thunderbolt peripherals to arrive as well. So that's another story. But, you know, they could literally, you know, take a Mac Pro. I mean, we've got quad-core Mac Pros now, haven't we? And shovel that into a smaller box, and there you go. There's your new Mac Mini.
What's most worrying about your redesign here, Don, is you've gone back to the Cube.
And no, I mean, as soon as I mentioned Cube, I mentioned Cube.
No, the Cube looked great. One of my followers sent a tweet out the other week saying, just been and picked this up, got it for 50 quid, and he showed a picture of a beautiful little Cube. And I would love one. They're completely useless as a computer, but I would love one. Mm.
They look relaunch fantastic. The Cube, you never know.
Well, I've got my old iMac back and my collection. I could do with a Cube. That'd finish me off then. And I saw a 12-inch, do you remember the 12-inch PowerBooks? That was a form factor that everyone wanted back, didn't they? Everyone wanted the 12-inch with the 4:3 screen on it. And I saw one the other day in a guy's garage when I went to pick my iMac up. It looked absolutely gorgeous. Now, the vote from the chat room is not a Cube. Is this Don's wish list?
Mystic Dog.
Oh, apparently there's Wirecast 4.1 have made this announcement about Skype integration as well, says Mark. I haven't seen that, Mark. If you've got a link, stick it in the chat room for us, pal. We'll have a chat about it. Because I do love Wirecast. It's right up there at the moment. I sent an email sent a tweet out, and the Boinks CEO questioned me on why I thought Boinks was crap, and so I told him. I don't think my NFR license is going to work anymore. Which is a problem, because Will lent it to me.
And they sent me an email to say, what did you think? I said, I've got a few problems, so I've passed it on to you. And look at that, they were really nice as well.
I think it was great.
If they're listening, Boinks is ace. Boinks is ace.
Boinks is good, providing you've got a Mac Pro or providing you've got one of the new Mac Minis. I mean, it doesn't even run on my 512 graphics card on my MacBook Pro. It doesn't run it. It just won't run one camera HD.
You can't blame Boinks for your inadequacies in the hardware.
No, it's
field.
Just, it is GPU intensive, mate. That is all it wants, is GPU time. It constantly.
I've always gone for the opinion, if anybody sends me anything free, whatever it is, it's going to receive rave reviews.
Oh,
and I'm sticking with that.
That's isn't that bribery? Just by a different name.
I think it's good. I think, you know, it's they get guaranteed rave reviews if they send me something free.
Well, I was going to do a comparative review against Wirecast, because Wirecast sent this through. So according to what you've just said, now I'll have to do two separate reviews, both that say they're utterly fantastic.
That's the way to go.
We've got the press release posted in the chat room. I'll have a quick look at that while we do. Has anyone got any other Mac news? Because I've been away a little bit this week, so I haven't kept up with everything. But is there anything else happened, or have we pretty much covered that?
There's been a few updates, isn't there?
Go on. There's 4.3.2 came out, didn't it, to unbrick your iPad, which I'd already changed.
Yeah, and
10.6.7 was already out, but there's been a few little minor stuff things that have come through, isn't there?
If you give me a second, I've got my notes for... right, okay. So just... What have you got? Yeah, that's right. We talked about Final Cut Pro last week, didn't we? Safari's been updated and Snow Leopard's got some updates.
Yeah, little minor ones. iTunes has got an update.
Google wants computers to feel regret. Apparently.
Don't we all?
Basically, so here it is. Basically, the algorithm will let computers learn from their virtual experiences by measuring the distance between a desired outcome and the actual outcome. Using this measurement, Professor Mansour hopes that the computer will be able to predict the future. This is good, isn't it? I'd like one of these.
Computers
and minimize
the future
regret. Don, you need one of these to predict the future with your Mac Mini stuff. if the service and routing systems of the internet could see and evaluate all the relevant variables in advance, they could more efficiently prioritize server resource requests. This is dull, isn't it? This is they put a great headline and then you read it and it's very dull.
And the only other thing that I saw this week that was quite interesting is that we had Andy and Atkin on last week, who's saying, I don't think there's going to be anything happening with the Apple Cloud service until 2012. And there's a report this morning from Reuters saying that they're ready to go.
Well, that's on the music stuff, though, isn't it? That's on the streaming music service. It looks as though they're taking a different approach from Google, because what it looks like is that Google got around, they sort of sidestepped all the legal issues by allowing people to upload their own music to the cloud service that they've got. So for, like, you know, if there's a popular album, there'll actually be, you know, 100,000 copies of it stored on Google servers, whereas Apple just wants to they're sort of taking a licensing agreement so that they could, in theory, a bit like the way Dropbox does, have a single copy of a song and then stream that to lots and lots of different people. So they're taking a slightly different approach, but yeah, I mean, hopefully it's going to be fairly soon now. It all looks fairly positive.
What's your view, Mike? Because we haven't had you on before. So are we going to a much more rapid launch of the Apple Cloud system to keep up with Amazon, or do you agree with the 2012 thing?
I agree on the idea that Apple have been ready. They bought Lala quite some time ago, and they were probably just waiting to see what Amazon could do and seeing how the labels responded, whether it's to see whether, you know, how much money they were going to lose. But I think I listened to last week's, and I think I am on the caution of agreeing with Andy as well that we might see some music stuff coming down the pike quite soon, but Apple have got more than that. Mm-hmm. That seems to be far too simple, and I think Apple are looking at what the guys at Dropbox are doing, and like we need that integrated, and get maybe completely overhauling MobileMe would be a very useful thing to do. So there'll be something. I can't pontificate what that could be, because I've not got that sort of brain. If I did, then I'd be a rich man. But I think that we'll start with seeing stuff with iTunes, and it will definitely move on and evolve from there.
But Don, you're saying that you're pretty sure now that iPhone 5 won't be this year. But that leaves September.
Not in June.
Then,
not in June. I think the current rumours say it's probably going to be September when it comes out, which ties in nicely with what we were talking about before. You know, the way the iPod is the sales are falling off of the iPod. And you know, with historically announcing the iPhone in June, and then the iPod for the Christmas rush in September, looks like what they're going to do is drop the iPhone in June and then launch it in September. So in effect, the big event that they have in September now becomes an iPhone event rather than an iPod event, and that would actually work out, I think, fairly well for them. I mean, Jim Dalrymple at The Loop got the tip off that iPhone 5 wasn't coming out in June. And I think pretty much everybody now is in agreement with that.
Yeah, they're talking about June production for a September launch from the things that we saw. And like you say, Niamh, with the downturn in the iPod sales, then it clearly links that your iPhone is becoming your iPod. So pushing the two together and making it September sells two birds with one stone.
Yeah, very much so.
Have we got any cool thingies? Don, would you like to start us off?
Go on then. What I will say... what it's called now. Hang on, let me have a look. I'm just trying this out. It's an application. I mean, I'm a big mail user. I use mail a lot, and to be honest, I use several mail systems. I use Apple Mail. I also use Mail Act On and Mail Tags as well, and I've got that all sort of working quite nicely. But I have to say, I've been quite impressed with an application called Sparrow, which used to be a Gmail client. It looks very much like Twitter, you know, Twitter for Mac, or what used to be called Tweety. It takes on the very same, you know, it's a similar sort of interface. But at the latest release, they've allowed it to, or they've engineered it to actually use IMAP accounts. So you can actually use it with your Apple Mail now.
Yeah.
And I've been pretty impressed with it. It looks really nice. Some nice functionality in there. It is. I think there's a Sparrow Lite and there's a paid version. I think the Sparrow Lite version just uses. You can configure that for Gmail, but the full version of Sparrow you can use with your Apple Mail. And it's a quite a nice little product.
It's a very different interface, isn't it? I bought Sparrow when it came out in the App Store to start with, and it only did your standard Gmail accounts. It didn't do anything else. But now I've got it, and really, I've got to say, I prefer it to Mail. Definitely, I've got to get used to the interface.
I'm a big fan of Sparrow. I get very upset when I have to open Mail.app because it takes far, far too long to do anything. Mm. And Sparrow, it really syncs things up nicely for me. And I think a lot of people use Gmail now with, you know, their Google Apps stuff as well. And all of the stuff that we do for the shows, we have all the email addresses through Google.
Yeah.
And, you know, all the label integration and the archiving and stuff is really, really good.
Excellent, good pick, mate. It's about £10, though, isn't it, for the heavier version?
$8.99. Yeah, not too sure of the price, to be honest.
You can get it in the App
check
Store.
It and pop it into the show notes.
I think there's a light version as well in the App Store.
Yeah, Don said there was a light one, but I, like a fool, bought there was only one. Andrew, have you got a cool thingy for us?
I have. Yes, I've been enjoying this, and as the summer comes on, and people are out barbecuing, and it gets darker, and the stars come out to play, it's probably a good sort of conversation thing, and it's certainly educational. It's an app for the iPhone and the iPad by Vito Technology, and it's called Skywalk, and it's a bit of augmented with the cameras on the phone. I guess it's augmented on the pad now as well. It's basically just like a planetarium on your phone or pad, and you just uses the gyroscopes and the GPS, so it's tracking you as you gaze, and it puts like a star field over your vision, and you can whiz around and you can see what's in front of you. You can line it up with the trees and the buildings, and you can point at the stars and it shows you what they are. You can click on them with your finger and it'll say, well, this is like Beta Canaries, this is Vega, this is Betelgeuse, and all these things. It's got satellites in there. You can see the ISS whizzing over. Click on it gives you the deep details of the ISS. It's a really nice little sort of augmentation. If you love the stars, you don't necessarily know what they're all called, where they are, it really does add a whole, you know, depth, and you can be out there for hours even if you've got like a dark sky. It's lovely. It's a nice little app. Well done. Works well as it tracks your phone as you move around. You can see the sky moving with you. Yeah, brilliant. Love it.
Price?
Price is $1.79 for the phone app and $2.99 for the iPad app. So it's not expensive, and it's got a lot of detail in there.
Can you upscale?
No. Well, you mean get the iPad one and not pay any more or whatever?
Yeah, the iPhone one. And then
buy the iPhone one, they make you buy the iPad one as well. So I've got both. So even so, it's still, you know, fiver for,
still
for
bad.
Hours and hours of educational entertainment.
I'd buy that just for the space station one. Yeah, excellent.
Yeah, it's lovely to see. It's great. And it integrates with Astronomy Picture of the Day, which was one of my secret favorite websites. You get a lovely, you know, there's some fantastic photos there. It pulls the APOD picture in for each day. It's got, you know, stacks and stacks of geolocation data on what you can see and when and things. Brilliant.
Excellent. Mike, first time on, but have you got a cool thing for us?
I do, yes. You've probably all heard about this from all the controversy that's been surrounding it, but I'm going to pick Tweetbot, which is an iPhone application, which is by and large now my favorite Twitter client. It's complete on day one, sort of in the first 10 minutes, made its way onto my home screen. Tweetbot kind of, it doesn't bring too much new to Twitter iOS apps, but what it does is it has all of the features you'd expect from your average Twitter client, but the user interface is just so beautiful. And there's things like sound effects, like there's different sound effects for all different types of things, like if you send a tweet, if you retweet. And it's kind of made me feel like a bit of a power user when on the iOS now, because I've got tweets flying off all over the place because, you know, the sound effects are queuing it up to me to let me know that things are being successfully completed. It's made by the guys at Tapbots, who've made apps like Calcbot and Pastebot and such, which have always got really great user interfaces. It's definitely something that I would suggest for people to look at, because for a 1.0 product, it's really, really very impressive.
It looks like Don's finding it already. What's the price on that, mate?
I believe it's £1.19.
Very good price as well. So,
yeah.
So that's the problem. You can spend £200 and you get lots for it, but it comes up on you real quick, doesn't it? 25 quid disappears.
Especially the way that Apple sort of groups your purchases together. Like a couple of quid here, a couple of quid here, get an email, £22. Oh, God.
While we're on the subject of Twitter clients, one of the questions I've got, is there any iPhone applications that deal with multiple accounts really, really well? I've got an issue of trying to use the rugby Twitter account to tweet out the scores and stuff like that, and then the Bagel Tech one as well as. And I'm not too worried about the UN ranking one and that kind of stuff. But TweetDeck doesn't do it. It's very glitchy. You don't seem to get a nice, smooth flow between the two. And a lot of the other ones, Twitter application itself is an absolute dog. I've started trying to use Tweety as well, but that doesn't deal with multiple accounts well. Is there one that anyone recommends for multiple accounts on iPhone that works really well?
Oh, I like the Twitter app. I use it on the Mac and on the phone. I thought it handled multiple accounts really well, just to click and switch between the two accounts. They slide up and down the screen. I've got my Dr. Happy Mac 1 and a Peugeot 1 that I use, and they go zoom, up and down, switches over.
It completely crapped out on me the other week. Just, I had to uninstall it. I just couldn't use it at all.
I must say, with Twitter on the Mac and the phone, it's rubbish and the iPad. If you get the DMs in or mentions and stuff, it will not. Does yours do that? You keep saying you've got a mention and you click on it and go, oh yeah, that was 3 weeks ago and I've clicked on that 10 times.
Yeah, the only one I use now is Echo Phone. And I'm not sure how that handles multiple accounts, but I like it because it will actually sync for the very reason Andrew was mentioning, you know, mentions and DMs and stuff. It actually syncs your unread and read messages. So, you know, once I've actually read a DM or a message on my Mac, and then I go to my iPhone or iPad, it's actually marked as read on there as well. So that's good. Yeah, that works pretty well. But I do
just
like
to clarify
that
on the iTunes store, there's two apps called Tweetbot. There's Tweetbot and Tweetbot a Twitter client. So which it. Is it
Tweetbot a Twitter client with personality is the full name.
That's the one, yeah.
On the iTunes store, because somebody snuck in there and picked it up from, which is not very fair. But
Osfora HD apparently is good for multiple accounts for the iPad, but not for the phone. So I think you recommended Osfora before, didn't you, Don?
I have done in the past. Yeah, I used to use that one
when it was good. But not anymore.
Well, the thing is, you've got to try all these Twitter clients when they come out, don't you?
It's
one of those problems, you know. You're never satisfied, really.
Like
something that one does that another one doesn't. So still wait for the ultimate.
Will, have you got a cool thing for us?
I've got two. Is that okay?
No, mate. You always got two. So I just presume. Go ahead.
Right.
That means yes.
It's a weary yes. Go ahead.
What do you mean? How dare you? Magic decanter.
This is where you pour wine all over your iPad.
Pretty much. Okay, so Steve, who I know is in the chat room, so Steve sent me this.
Right.
And so what it is, for us wine connoisseur, you know, I'm no wine connoisseur, but if you like a drop and you really enjoy it after it's been let it breathe for a bit, but you're in a rush and you haven't got time to wait, well, the magic decanter is the decanter for you.
So
if
talk
there
us
any others, I'm not too sure.
Talk us through what it actually physically does for you then.
Okay, so it's a sort of perspexy type goblet thing, and what it does, as the wine goes through the magic decanter, it injects air into it, and so it falls into your glass. But it doesn't. When I say inject air, it uses as the wine's sort of going through the little hole, it sucks the air in, and it makes the most lovely sound.
So it is a soda stream for your wine.
Would you like to hear it?
Go on then.
I've got it ready. It's amazing. Ready? This isn't effect or anything.
That sounds like an old boy with a prostate problem.
I've got to go now, guys.
Well, when you get your prostate fixed. Well, that's what age does to you, pal.
Isn't that good?
It sounds great. Steve, I want one. They sound fantastic.
It's really fun.
Jolly good. And what's your second one then?
The second one is it's slightly more connected with Apple. In June, it's my birthday. And I move from one decade to another, if you get my meaning.
You're 40.
How dare you? No, I am. Yeah, okay, 40, yes. Yes, I'm 40. So, what am I doing for my 40th? Well, I'm going to Alton Towers, and I booked the hotel for four nights. Four nights of fun in Alton Towers, and I haven't been since I was a little boy. So it must be, 30 years since I've been to Alton Towers. And so I'm really excited about going. And I don't know about you, but the looking forward to something is probably better than the actual arriving, you know. and so I was looking for something that could help me look forward to it. Well, you know, when I was a boy, we went to one in America, what's it called? Disneyland. And with, what are those little cheese triangle things?
Dairy Lee.
With Dairy Lee, they were doing, you got a Disneyland poster, and every pack of Dairy Lee, you got a little sticker. And I used to put the stickers on, and it really helped me get really excited about going to Disneyland. So this is very similar, sort of, but it's for the iPhone.
Cheese for the iPhone.
We're back on cheese, mac and cheese.
It's called Towers Guide. It's 59p, and it tells you everything you want to know about Alton Towers. It even so when you can plan your holiday there, you can. It's got GPS, and so it'll tell you where you are, and it's got a map of Alton Towers in there. It's got all the history of the rides. Just an incredible depth as well, or photos, the behind-the-scenes stuff. It's really, really fun. And if Alton Towers is, not close to you and you want to go to, say, Drayton Manor or one of the other parks, they do the same sort of application, but for different, what do you call
That's
them?
That's cool. Theme parks.
Things. That's right, theme parks.
What's it called?
I don't know. I said it, didn't I? Towers Guide.
Towers Guide, thank you.
Towers Guide. Yeah.
What's it called? I don't know.
You tell me.
You're ace, mate. Thank you.
Towers Guide. It's good. It's really, really fun. I find myself sitting on the toilet every morning thinking, well, explore a different ride.
Oh, brings a whole... Today, mate, you've brought a whole new meaning to the term corkscrew. Most definitely.
That's not there, you know, anymore.
The corkscrew's gone.
Yeah, and Doom and Sons. This application told me all I need to know. Doom and Sons is gone. The Haunted House is gone. The Arabian Nights ride is gone.
They moved a lot of the good rides to Fort Park.
But I heard that. Yeah, they sold them off cheap or something, didn't they? Aren't they owned by Madame Tussauds or something?
Yeah, there's all one company, Merlin, and they moved. Yeah, this is crazy why we're talking about this. But yeah, they moved a lot of the really good stuff to Fort Park.
All the old crappy rides went to Fort Park.
Yeah, I think so.
All the stuff where you took your life in your hands. I was watching at Chessington as well, and there's quite a few things there where there's one with a rotating seat bucket thing that goes around. The amount of movement in those uprights, I mean, these things were swaying backwards and forwards 2 foot at the top. And they always say that the strength is in the movement, isn't it? Not in the, yeah. So, but you wouldn't catch me on some of them.
Do you go to the? Do you have up your way the sort of travelling mop fair that comes round with all the sort of rides and things?
Yeah,
it's brilliant. Chinese. You go on the big sort of multiple spinning round stuff they got there, and the waltzer, and we've got one in Siren Sister which has an enormous spinning thing, and you go on it with your daughters, and you sat there, and there's a guy with rolled up t-shirt sleeves and a 30-year-old baseball cap with a cigarette on the go, and you whiz past him, and you think, you see that unshaven guy there? He built this thing this morning in 10 minutes with a hangover.
With his bare hands.
Yeah.
None of it's
and
tightened.
I'm on it.
Right, my cool thing, I'm going to be blatant here, and I stole it from James Hart, who recommended it on last week's Big Show, but I've had all week to play with it with Ellis, sat out in the garden and sat out under the night sky this week, and because it's been absolutely fantastic, deep blue skies in the evenings, you've got 30 miles of vision all over the place. It's Flight Radar 24. It's an iPhone application, and basically it gives you a complete layout of the local sky, and it puts your GPS on and it pings it all the time, and then it tells you, if it doesn't disappear, it tells you where the local planes are as they're coming, and you can see them coming towards you. And last night, the coolest of cool things, both of us are sat there watching. We see a plane come in like it's going to go right overhead on the GPS, and sure enough, it went straight over the top of us. It was absolutely brilliant, exactly as the iPhone predicted. And it's also got a virtual reality kind of thing here, or augmented reality thing, where if you turn the phone around, it'll actually zero in on where there's a flight, and a little tag will appear and tell you where the flight's from, where it's going to, what type of plane it is, and all that kind of stuff. And it's you know, I'm not a plane spotter or anything, I'm not into that, but I just sat in the garden and had a whale of a time. So Andy, your pick over the space thing, it's already purchased, mate. Love it. Flight Radar 24. There we go. And you get a pro version for $179.
Isn't there, Ewan?
There's a free version and a paid version, but the paid version is only $179, so it's...
Do you not get with the free, is it?
I don't know. I didn't care. For $179, I just wanted fun. And the thing is, it's me and Ellis have been sat there glued to the iPhone waiting for planes to come. We're zooming out and out and out to see if there's anything that looks like it's coming our way.
Yeah, I've got it now. I should try that. I'm just downloading.
Real bonding experience with me, lad. Loved it to bits. Last word goes to our sponsors, UK2.net. We've crashed through all of the data records that we've ever had before. We're up to 2.5 terabytes of data has disappeared off the servers this month. We haven't broken it either, which is nice. They're putting 2 new nodes on us because they're worried about it might fall over if we get any more going through. And I asked them about putting video on as well because we want to do video podcasts. And surprisingly, they said yes. So... Sarah's going to make us some pages, and in the next couple of weeks there's going to be video podcasts added to the feed, and they'll go up as well as. So thank you, UK2. If you want a VPS server, as hasn't fallen over, which is testament in itself based on how fast it's been absolutely hammered with downloads. We did 26,000 in 24 hours a couple of weeks back when Andy came on for breakfast at Inatco's in March, and they're great. You'll get a free month if you use the offer code BagelTech. So go to our homepage, and then right at the very bottom of the page, you'll see a UK2 advertisement or banner. Click on that, and that'll send a tracking code saying that you've come from BagelTech, and we'll get the credit for it, which is nice. We don't get any money, we just get credit. And then they'll give you the offer code when you purchase and check out. Use BagelTech with a space between it, B-A-G-E-L. Space TECH, and you'll get your first month absolutely free off the VPS server. The other thing is their co-location services. Again, if you use our click through, navigate through to the co-location services. When you buy that, you're going to get the first month free of charge, and you're also going to get an iPad 2. And they've also got some Easter deals on at the moment where you can win iPods because they're not selling. So thank you, UK2. We'd be absolutely stuffed. And you can see there as well at the bottom of that page, Don McAllister has very kindly given a special deal for all BagelTech listeners. If you want to sign up to the screencasts online, they are well worth doing. If there's an application in that list that you're not sure how to get started, Don's got the perfect way of taking you in nice and slow and easy and not losing you in the process. Again, offer code is BagelTech, no space this time, and you'll get 50% off your first year with Don, which is a fantastic offer. Thank you ever so much, Don. Do appreciate it. We've pumped it on all the shows as well because I think most of them, you know, we get a lot of Mac listeners in, so it'll all come in useful. Where can we get a hold of you then, Mr. McAllister?
Right, well, you can find me over at screencastonline.com, which is the podcast. You can also find me over on Twitter as Don McAllister and at my blog at themacscreencastguy.com.
Thanks, mate. Go there and enjoy. Andrew, what about you? How's the Siren Sester market going?
Oh, the Siren Sester market. Oh, great fun. Yes, I've been selling Macs. People have been coming up and shoving folding paper money under my nose and taking iMacs away. So, I'm quite chuffed with it. It's been good. It's a really strange way to sell computers and meet the public. But I'm going to be there on the bank holiday Monday, which should be a bit of a riot with obviously all the people coming into town on that. So Siren Sester Cornhall market on Monday. It's been good.
Excellent. And where can we get a hold of you then?
You can get hold of me on Twitter, which is at Dr. Happy Mac. And then the internets is www.drhappymac.co.uk. But mostly after my horrendously alcohol-fueled trip to Glasgow. And I think Will appreciate this. You can find me in Lidl, because I'm actually probably just through a pure addiction. Lidl also have a surprisingly piquant selection of red wines at a very good prices. Some of the Tesco stuff, half price wines, not really living up to their, you know. But yeah, Will, hit the Lidl's. Good stuff.
Welcome. Lidl, they're German, aren't they, or something?
They are, yes.
Lidl and Aldi are both German, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. They got some really nice South African wines, some really good Australian wines, some really nice Merlots going on there for a really good price.
Welcome to Bagel Tech Binge.
I would do that. I've always found the... I don't like Spanishy wine. You know that strange taste that you get with it? Don't like it.
Mm. Oh, they've got... Well, Rioja's good. Is that how you pronounce it?
Spanish, that strange tasting wine. Jesus.
I'm sure if... you must have had that. That's like weird. It's weird tasting, the Spanish stuff. Stay clear of the Spanish wine.
Oh, it's a personal taste thing,
El Antifrizo.
Easy. Jesus.
No, I like Spanish wine. It's brilliant.
Yeah, if the ambassador for Spain is listening, then we love it. Sorry.
Be nice to get a holiday there. I haven't been to Spain.
Apparently, as well, Lidl is a really good employer in Germany. I've got a company that I do work for that's near to their head office, and apparently they're like one of the best firms in Germany for looking after their staff. Really good welfare policies and stuff.
My mum buys my Christmas present from there for every year for about 10 years now.
Well, a lot of what's in there is really good quality stuff. It's not crap.
Oh, it's cheap. I get the crap.
Lovely salmon as well. Really nice salmon.
Good quality stuff. Anyway.
Happy Christmas. Are they a salmon wheel?
Can we get them as a sponsor?
Well, probably now, yes. Bagel Tech shop will be starting week after next, so we'll do it then. Mike, tell us about the Bro Show and how people can get into it and hold and have a go.
The Bro Show is, as I mentioned earlier, it's a show by me and my good friend Terence. It's a weekly podcast, which you can find at thebroshow.co.uk. It's one of three podcasts that I produce because I'm far busier than I should be. And you can find links to everything else that I do at thepodcastingproject.com, which is my own blog. Another podcast that I do is with Patrick Rowan of Minimal Mac. And we do the Minimal Mac podcast together, which is great fun. And you can find me on Twitter at imike, I-M-Y-K-E, just because I like to be a little bit different.
Jolly good. Yeah, if you send us a banner through, mate, we'll stick it on the mates page when we get that going later this month.
Oh, thank you.
We'll have some links through. Where can people get hold of you on Twitter and stuff like that? Is that?
Yeah, so, well, my own personal is iMike, which is I-M-Y-K-E, and The Bro Show for The Bro Show account.
There's a question in the chat room before having Oz Clark on next week. And finally, Oz Clark, I mean, Will Green.
Going back to that little thing, you know, like a little bit of Christmas. Well, Mum bought me this gas camping light thing from Lidl once. I took it on holiday, and honestly, it properly set on fire. It was like a fireball. Then I started booting it around the campsite because I was worried that it would set fire to the tent. It was impressive as it rocketed through the sky.
So is that Lidl suing us now?
Well, we don't do any suing, but honestly, the thing exploded. It was amazing. It was like, you know, one of those gas lamps. You get.
If anyone's listening that Will's offended, just please be aware that we've got no money. So you can sue us all you like, but there is no money to get. So,
No. I'm sure that they've had a few comments about the exploding lights. Anyway, you know, we're talking about the sky at night a little bit. Andrew was talking about it.
Yeah.
Check it out tonight and tomorrow, when there's going to be some huge, shooting stars. So the Earth is passing through the trail of debris left by the Comet Thatcher.
Comet Thatcher.
Comet Thatcher. Yes.
The trail of debris left by Thatcher. There we go.
Yes.
Oh, it's topical. Good.
So check it out tonight if you've got a nice clear view of the sky.
And don't forget, tomorrow is, of course, Day of the Triffids.
Is it?
No, that's the day of the way the Day of the Triffids starts, isn't it? Bright meteor showers, yeah. And everyone turns everyone blind. Weren't you awake during the fourth year of school, mate?
Sort of remember something about it. It was quite scary, wasn't it?
Yeah, you're 40, mate. You did Day of the Triffids, same as I did.
I'm not 40. I'm 39.
You hold on to it, pal. Trust me. You'll miss it when it's gone.
I've got 2 months left of it. 39 I am.
The hair will start coming out your nose and ears before you know it.
Oh, that's happened already. Scary, isn't it?
Mike, you listening? Don't grow up.
I'm trying my best.
Good man. The Bagel Tech Bash is definitely happening. It will be on the 8th of July. We've got a location sorted. There's plenty of cheap hotels near here, apparently, as well. Someone's already booked their flights down from Scotland. So we've got no choice but to run it now, even if it's just for them. They might be staying on my living room floor if no one else comes. We've got about 100 spaces, and we're filling up reasonably quickly. So if you want a space, send us an email to any of the Bagel Tech addresses, bageltechrage@gmail.com, bageltechnews@gmail.com, bageltechmac, and there'll be a pig roast and there'll be beer on and stuff like that. There'll be some real ales at the rugby club. I think we're going to have it. And I'm going to have a word with them as well about pitching a few tents on the grass, because I think they're all right with that kind of stuff. We're bringing a motor home. So it's 8th of July, Bagel Tech Bash. We're going to do all the shows from there as well, as, but we just need to figure out how we're going to get internet there. Might have to get everyone to bring their 3G dongle, because there's a really good 3 signal down there, which is nice. So Steve can bring his if he's got it with him. 8th of July, see you there. Thanks for joining us. I hope you have a great week, and good bank holiday. And we'll see you next Friday as normal.